Gosling wins it back into Cherries midfield, and now opportunities again for Bournemouth. Gosling goes himself. Oh, it's another cracker! Dan Gosling again, second of the game and the best of the lot so far. A 25-yard strike on the hour puts the Cherries into clear water here against the Sky Blues. 3-1 up.
Hello, good morning. Well, not weather-wise, is it? It's pretty disgusting out there. But nevertheless, we're here to bring some good vibes to your ears. My name's Sam Davis. This is episode 99 of Back of the Net. Hope you're doing all right. Hope you've had a good weekend. You probably have. I reckon you might have. It's been a weird weekend in football, but a good weekend for AFC Bournemouth. We won at St Andrews, hopefully not the last time I'll be saying that this season, but it was a convincing 3-1 win against Coventry. And in this podcast, we've got an extended match chat with Jeff Hayward. 55 minutes worth, that's what I'm talking about, eh? Now, if you're looking to listen and see some fan reactions after the game against the Sky Blues, I do invite you to go to our YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/AFCB podcast, as after the game, there was a 90-minute free-for-all. We got some new faces. Brilliant to chat to some legends, by the way, of Ethan Burney, who is on, and Vin as well, young Cherries fans. And if that's our future, well, I'm well excited because they are articulate, well-spoken, polite and raring to go. Plus, of course, some of the usual Back of the Net crew too. So do check that out as well. We've had nearly 3,000 views of that video over the weekend, so really impressed with that. But the floor is Jeff Hayward today as we go over that Coventry game and discuss how AFC Bournemouth have been so far. But first, let's do this. So in this week's Do You Remember? This is a difficult one because I'll level with you. I'm not actually sure I know the answer to this. At the end of the show, I'm going to say what I think is the answer, but you're welcome to prove me wrong, okay? So obviously in the week, AFC Bournemouth announced the loan signing from Atletico Madrid of 20-year-old winger, our new star in the making, hopefully, Rodrigo Riquelme, the alliterative genius that's hopefully going to tear the championship apart. My question to you is, who was the last AFC Bournemouth signing that we made that played for the first team as well, who had an alliterative name? Difficult one, eh? Have a think. The first and last letter of their name starts the same. That's alliteration. If you go to Transfer Market, it will say Sam Surridge, okay? He came back from loan. That doesn't count as a signing. Also, when he moved from the under-21s into the first team, that also doesn't count as a new signing as well. So a player that came in, played for the first team and had an alliterative name. I've got an idea of the answer. Feel free to prove me wrong. And all that is going to be at the end of the show. So in this podcast, we're keeping it really simple. It's just me, Jeff, and 55 minutes of delectable AFC Bournemouth chat after Cherries, well, we swept aside Coventry 3-1 at St Andrews. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What a weekend. It's been fantastic.
It's been a good footballing weekend, hasn't it? Lots of, you know, different sorts of results. Even yesterday, we were watching Manchester United capitulate at home and then, you know, Aston Villa scoring tons of goals against Liverpool. It's been a bizarre one, hasn't it?
A bizarre one. Even in the Championship, who would have seen that Brentford go 2-0 up at half-time and end up losing 4-2 at home to Preston? Now, it's bonkers. Football's going crazy.
And I just wonder what effect playing behind closed doors has the effect on the players, because it seems to be we are seeing so many different results, ones that we wouldn't maybe have seen when fans were in the stadium.
Yeah, very unpredictable. I'm not quite sure what the reasons are for it. It's really tricky. Maybe some players find it difficult to stay focused on the game. I mean, so many goals, and you know, some of the goals, incredible defensive blunders. Would that happen with a crowd if they were more on it? I don't know. You know, it's hugely enjoyable and entertaining. What can I say?
And it was certainly enjoyable on Friday, wasn't it? As Bournemouth overturned Coventry City 3-1 at St Andrews, the Trillion Trophy Stadium or something? I don't know if that's sarcasm or what, but either way, Bournemouth once again travelled to St Andrews and got a convincing victory. But I've got to say, you know, at 6:45, when I saw the teams announced, I was really nervous. No Josh King on the bench, no Dan Juma starting. At that point, it made me instantly question the depth that Bournemouth might not have.
Well, we had no Stanislas either. David Brooks was only fit enough to be on the bench. Rodrigo Riquelme, the new signing that we were all looking forward to seeing, hadn't had his international clearance. So we only named six subs, which is a little bit of a concern. And like you, I was thinking, I hope this doesn't get a bit tricky, because Dan Juma has been our star man. And they were big shoes for Sam Surridge to fill.
They were. Now, I don't know about you, Jeff, but I'm not one to pull a sickie. But someone had a migraine during the day on Friday. Josh King couldn't play for AFC Bournemouth, given his conditions. Thoughts when you heard that?
Well, he wasn't in the actual lineup or on the bench. I was nervous that he could be protecting himself, doing a bit of a Fraser, not wanting to play or get injured just in case he was due a medical somewhere else. The fact that he said it was a migraine, Jason Tindall corroborated that story. So you got to take it at face value and think, yeah, you know, Kingy played last week. Give him the benefit of the doubt. But I cannot wait for this transfer window to close, because the speculation, the uncertainty isn't helpful. And I thought it was going to be detrimental to the team's performance, because how are they feeling? You know, some of the players are not turning up or not wanting to be part of the squad. That could be affecting the team on the pitch.
Well, part of me thinks, I was just sort of analysing it after the game. Maybe before the game I was slightly worried, but afterwards I thought, well, if they're going to come up with an excuse, surely they would come up with something better and more believable. They won't get the fans worried, because a migraine sounds awful. It sounds awful. And as someone said on Twitter, I can't remember who it was, Tommy Heffernan's Poodle, it's something my wife would say at the end of the night, put it that way. And it's one of those things that you sort of look at it and think, well, surely he could have gone with the party line of he's got a knock, he got a, you know, calf strain in training or something, you know, fairly believable. But a migraine, something you don't really think of. So maybe, just maybe, it was actually true.
Maybe it was. We cannot speculate anymore until these next couple of weeks are out of the way. I mean, they've got international games coming up as well, and I'm sure Brooks wanted to play against England rather than risk causing himself any injury. Perhaps, you know, I don't know. Like I say, let's just get our squad actually fixed for the season and carry on, because we've got a lot to be encouraged about after Friday night.
Tell you what, personally, I had a lot to be encouraged about. So did you, even before the game had started, when we're watching Sky Sports and they're mentioning back of the net. Jeff, did you hear that bit?
I did. I nearly fell off my chair.
Like, whoa! Where did that come from?
Yeah. Caroline is obviously a big fan. I mean, it's great for the credibility of the podcast that we're being taken seriously by journalists and being quoted with credibility. So, sure it was something you said, Sam. Nothing I said, I'm sure.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to find that clip and I'm going to go back and see who said it. And then whoever did say it, kudos to them. But yeah, you know what? It was really nice to get acknowledged in that way. And it's so funny, because I was watching on Now TV, which is 30 seconds ahead. And I got this, like, you know, textual flurry on my phone. And I didn't look at it at the time, but then I realised this is what it's going to be about now. It's like back of the net, got a mention. And she was alluding to our attacking options that we may not have in terms of our squad depth or something like that. Simon Francis with was in the studio as well. And he was another person that raised his eyebrows at Josh King's migraine. But nevertheless, when you saw the starting lineup that we had, Jeff, how did you feel? We were deploying that sort of 3-5-2 formation again, weren't we?
Yeah, I think Surridge coming in for Danjuma, it's not a straight swap. You know, Danjuma was playing slightly off Solanke, so Solanke would be the furthest up forward, and it was that sort of one just behind the striker. So with Sam up there, it actually gave us a bit more of a conventional 3-5-2, I think. And actually, I think it helped us. It certainly the midfield performed as they did last week against Norwich, and I thought everyone from back to front were outstanding on the night. Absolutely outstanding.
One of the stats that was mentioned, either in commentary or by the pundits before the game, they compared the team's value, and I think it was £92 million. At that moment, that kind of put it into context for me, thinking, we've got to win tonight. And not least the fact that only 3 months ago, we were two divisions apart. And I think on AFC Bournemouth's part, we still feel that relegation was unjust. Although, we finished where we did, 18th. That's fair enough. We get relegated. And it felt as though we had to win based on that stat and the fact that, we were so far apart.
Yeah, we've got a Premier League squad, no doubt about it. And you look at that squad in the Championship and you think that is by far and away the best, most talented, technically skillful players that that one team can put out in the Championship. I haven't seen anything from any of the other sides that is anywhere near as good as what our players can do. The difficulty for us has been over the last season and a half, really, last couple of seasons that Eddie was in charge, was getting that consistency of performance week in, week out to prove that actually we are as good as we know we are. I mean, that team, the bulk of that team, beat Everton 3-1 away and Leicester 4-1 at home in the last few games of the season. Winner, that is comfortable mid-table Premier League form. So here we are in the Championship. What the players have to do, and I think Friday night was a step towards that, is actually recognise that you may be 90 million quid more valuable than the other team, but it's meaningless unless you actually put it in on the pitch every week, get the results and prove it. And what was so refreshing about Friday, from the first minute, we were in Coventry's faces, and it was just brilliant to watch that we went out to dominate them.
We've adopted this high press, haven't we? Which I think has been really refreshing to see. Jefferson Lerma is out of the three midfielders, pushing really high. He gives us something extra. And we managed to pen Coventry in and move the ball really sharply, I thought, in the first stages of that first half. Well, actually, throughout the first half, to be honest, but especially in the first spell that led up to the goal, I thought we showed really good signs. There was a moment on 6 minutes where Rico, I think he's brilliant at doing this, firing low, concise balls forward up the pitch that get controlled by the striker, or he puts someone in on goal and it was Solanke that the ball met at that time. Poor control though up front, let him down at the time. But then moments later, on 7 minutes, a combination of Cookie, Dan Gosling pirouetting as if he's Maradona, Dom Solanke holding it up, and that perfectly weighted pass back to Jefferson Lerma hanging around on the edge of the box to fire with his instep into the low bottom right-hand corner past the diving keeper. 1-0 to Bournemouth. Well deserved, but some incredible football in that first 7-8 minutes, wasn't it?
It was absolutely beautiful to watch the crispness of the passing, the aggression with the pressing. We won the ball back so many times in their half. I mean, they couldn't get out. We were that good. And when we got the ball, I thought Adam Smith and Jack Stacey, I mean, throughout the night, they were brilliant at creating those overlaps. Lewis Cook was fantastic as that sort of holding midfield player, but then releasing Gosling and Lerma in front of him. I mean, it was just, we were so on it. And that goal, it was so reminiscent of the goal against Blackburn, where just teeing it up for Lerma, Solanke to Lerma again. What a finish. And Jefferson Lerma, what a revelation. I do think with the 3-4-3, or 3-5-2, whenever we played that in the Premier League, it was completely a defensive setup, a defensive mindset. So what would often happen would be we'd end up with 8-9 players behind the ball in our half, never getting out of our half, trying to hit teams on the break, and obviously not being very successful at doing that because all the players were always trapped so far back. What we're doing on this time is that 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, we're winning the ball in the opposition half, playing on the front foot, and it's just killing other teams because technically our players are so good.
Yeah, and I found myself just watching. I mean, Coventry, you adopted a sort of 3-4-3 as well, but you know, by the looks of it, you know, that formation, that, well, they've played that for a number of times, but they sort of adapted it during the game. But I don't think they were technically good enough to actually deploy that when you've got the pressing prowess that we have. And we were doing it so often, and they were making mistakes, and we were recycling the ball really quickly. And that first goal was testament to that. And we had a number of chances throughout the game that were very similar, whereby they were making mistakes, almost like Man United against Spurs yesterday, Jeff, when we watched that, and Man United were trying to do the impossible. Well, actually, not the impossible, but they just weren't good enough. But it was really good to see Bournemouth with that high press, and it paid its dividends early on. And question for you, friend of the show, Dan Gosling, that pirouette that he did, do you think he meant it?
It was totally missed by commentary, but actually, you watch it and you think, yeah, he meant that. I mean, it was a lovely touch for Solanke, wasn't it? And just beautiful. If that's Brazil, we're talking about it for years. In fact, we're Bournemouth fans. We'll talk about that for years, I'm sure.
Of course we will. We indulge in any positivity here in Bournemouth. Now, at that stage, 1-0 up, we were having the bulk of possession. I think during the match itself, we had 63% possession, and most of that, I mean, in the first half, I felt we completely dominated and had a number of chances. But I do feel as though we weren't clinical as we should have been. And it should have been more comfortable after 45 minutes than what it was, hey?
Yeah, we should have been 2 or 3 up, I think. And so we're not 100% there with this system. It relies on the wing-backs. It relies a lot on Stacey and Smith being able to have that energy to get forward and back and support the back three where they need to, but provide that attacking width and get good crosses in. It also relies on the strikers scoring goals. And I think we're kind of creating lots of chance. I mean, we created 19 efforts on goal in that game, which is the most that we've created for a long time. And Solanke and Surridge, they both had good chances. They both got close, but not quite there yet. And I think if those two, and obviously with Dan Juma back inside, can score goals, you know, if we can get a 20 goal a season out of one of those, and the midfield, Gosling, Lerma, basically continue to score as they have been, get maybe 10 or 15, you know, we're sorted for the season. But it does rely on the strikers need to be more clinical. I'm sure it'll come. You know, we're not the finished article yet, but that is essential going forwards.
It is. And There were a number of chances that we had. Coventry manufactured a few. There was a Hamer low strike that Begovic saved low to his right-hand post, which was the first thing he really had to do. But what was quite nice is that even though he was pretty much unused and unneeded in that first 14, 15 minutes, when he was called, he saved really well, strong palm out for a corner. And, you know, there were a few moments after that where Bournemouth really should have, you know, I mean, there was that Smith Gosling Surridge pinball moment where that sort of reminded me actually of the melee at Brighton when Callum Wilson scored the scruffiest Premier League goal ever in our 2-2 there a couple of seasons ago. And it seemed to sort of, you know, ebb and flow. Hamer had a strike over the bar that came from a bit of a poor hold-up play. I think actually Dom Solanke lost it. He sort of did the hard bit and then he gave it away. And then Hamer had a strike over the bar. And then, you know, there were a number of chances. Dom Solanke should have maybe made it two when he rounded the keeper after that superb Sam Surridge flick. But there wasn't much he did wrong there, though, was there? Because he rounded the keeper. There wasn't much he could do, given the fact the defender was coming in, although you may look so...
Well, that reminded me a bit of... So Callum Wilson, when he was in his prime, that season that we went up to the Premier League and we got that result against Brighton, he scored
when
one
you
way...
Say, when you say he's in his prime, you're talking about now at Newcastle?
No. God, no. Look, crikey. Two of them are penalties, mate. Come on.
Exactly. It doesn't count. Go on.
Oh, and two of them have been tap-ins. Come on. Even Callum can't miss those. But when we played Brighton and we had that must-win game where Jan Kermit had scored that worldie free kick a few seasons ago, but Callum did something where he dummies the keeper to shoot with his right and actually chipped in with his left. And I think that is that cool clinical finishing of a top striker when Solanke knows that is the only thing that the defender is going to do. You have to check back on from your left onto your right there. And the absolute best, I mean, that we're talking the absolute best strikers will have that cold blood in their veins that they will think, I can see what the defender's going to do. And it actually... I need to check back and shoot. It's not easy. It's a natural thing that some strikers have, or you have to work at it. And I think that's where Solanke just needs to get more ruthless, more clinical, more actually, yeah, just more Wilson-esque in his finishing, in his prime.
Yeah, there was a goal that Man United, Marcus Rashford scored against Brighton the other week that was very similar, whereby he was going to take it with his right, turned back onto his left. And although with Callum, it was maybe slightly different. But it was one of those moments. And Mark Pugh was the god at watching a defender. And, you know, Cresswell is still sliding now from that 4-3 victory where he chopped him and he put it across the keeper to make it 3-2 to Bournemouth. And it's one of those things. You just need to have a little bit of nous and... You need to know that there is an oncoming defender, and it's one of the things. He was slightly off balance. He felt maybe he should just shoot then. I've seen other goals where they've kind of almost put it behind the defender as they're sliding in, but the angle was very tight. One thing I've got to say, Jeff, during that first half, one thing that we haven't said so far is that the referee, he's that Australian guy that's been featured on YouTube with the whole mic'd up thing where he chats to the players, and he's a very communicative referee. He's very good with, speaking with the players, liaising with them, and just, getting the respect of the players by just constantly talking to them. Now, obviously we didn't hear that during the game, but from what I saw, he was letting the game run on. He was playing the advantage as many times as he could. There were challenges, crunching challenges, that in the Premier League that would probably be the ref would blow the whistle. This match, not at all. And it was an enjoyable game to watch. And I know I'm a Bournemouth fan and I'm biased, but I'm sure for a neutral to see that kind of absorbing action where there's not the whistle going every 2 minutes, it must have been actually quite nice to see.
Yeah, I think he's been the best referee that I've seen in the four games so far. He did let the game flow, which was really good. However, I mean, I did think it was a really soft penalty. I think Lewis Cook was kind of done a bit by the commentary player throwing himself to the ground a bit. But commentary didn't deserve to be going in at 1-1 at all. I mean, we should have been out of sight 2 or 3 up already. But that gave them a bit of a lifeline. And I think also it's sort of slightly reminiscent of how we played against Middlesbrough. You know, we go a goal up. We do tend to just let the other team play a bit more, have a bit more of the ball. We sort of switch off a little bit, get a little bit complacent, get a bit deeper, because the only way that they got forward was because we stepped off the gas. And I think that sort of invites the other team onto us, that they create a couple of chances, as you rightly pointed out. And, they never looked like they were going to score. They get a penalty and bang, it's 1-1. And at halftime, you're thinking, oh, God, not another one of these games where we end up dropping points because we're not ruthless enough.
Yeah, and there was a chance just before that signalled what they could do with a long ball that was controlled very nicely down the left flank, and he squared it low and it met O'Hare, who turned his body. It fell for him and he just slide ruled it across and it just hit the outside of the post and it just went wide. And, you know, it didn't really trouble Begovic, but the writing was on the wall somewhat. And I messaged a number of people saying, look, this is so Bournemouth if we do concede now. And when you're dominating a match with possession and passing, it doesn't matter so much when you're in the lead, but you're always walking that tightrope, aren't you? And as the game went on, Coventry looked like they did have moments within them to actually pull one back. And just like a menial moment, Lewis Cook, you know, some people saying that it wasn't a penalty. It probably was on balance because he kind of went in a little bit recklessly. But all of a sudden, it's 1-1. And you just think, how on earth has this happened? But thankfully, we managed to turn it around.
Yeah, I am impressed with the halftime team talks that Jason seems to be giving, because they are getting results, immediate results. I mean, they came out at the start of that second half and it was like the players' ears were still burning from whatever they were told, because boy, did we go for Coventry. And that is absolutely the attitude we need to have against teams like Coventry, where the gulf in technical class is so vast. We need to make sure that we're getting that 2 or 3 goal lead that actually our merit deserves.
And we should have, after 48 minutes, 3 minutes after half time, we should have been 2-1 up. It was a Jeff Lerma ball through to Solanke, who then fed Gosling, he leant back and he just blazed it over the bar, and it was another missed opportunity. But thankfully, Gozo stepped up when it was needed. But, you know, even first 5 minutes of the second half, I'm thinking, oh my God, is this really happening again? Because it's such a Bournemouth thing to do, to dominate teams completely and yet not win a game. Was it worrying for you?
It was a bit, particularly after he blazed that one over. And what was just reassuring is the players weren't demotivated by that at all. And in fact, it was almost a carbon copy, where ball gets threaded through to Stacey. He crosses, Solanke has the first shot, breaks for Gosling, and a nice clipped finish with his left foot. It was what we deserved. We were all over them. And again, that goal comes from winning the ball back in their half. Some real quality attacking play using the wing backs. You know, the first goal comes from Adam Smith's side, second goal from Stacey's side. It was brilliant. That's how we're going to tear teams apart in this division.
And it's nice to see the intensity, because there's a moment, if you pause it when the Coventry player loses the ball initially, you think to yourself, well, Lewis Cook's quite a way away from this. There's no way he's going to win that. And it's, you know, to all intents and purposes, the Coventry players should be picking that up and then, you know, moving forward with it. But, you know, it just showed. I mean, Lewis Cook was, you know, just, he had his eyes on the ball, played that wonderful pass out to the right. And, yeah, it was a good finish from Dan Gosling, I think. Just lofted it slightly above the keeper. The defender got a touch on it, but it didn't really make a difference. And from that point forward, I then felt confident again. And I didn't feel as though Coventry were going to get back into it. And, you know, Sam Surridge, he had a great header only moments later where I think he almost generated the power all himself from this header. The keeper had a, you know, wonderful save to palm it wide. But again, another chance that I just wanted to see us take. But it's good to see us at least creating these opportunities whereby, yeah. Do you remember last season whereby we didn't have an attacking threat whatsoever? Yeah. And it wasn't even as if we could blame Callum or whoever was up front at the time for not taking the opportunities because they just weren't there. But now they are, and we're getting in the positions, albeit they're not being converted as much as we should, but it's happening. Yeah.
And I think one of the big differences between us this season and last season was we had a style of play last season. It served us really well for four or five seasons. And it was that sort of 4-4-2 inverted wingers. That's how we play. And what we tried to do last season was play that way without necessarily having the players who were suited to that system. And I think that's why we came unstuck. You look at it now and you think, whoa, playing Jefferson Lerma as an attacking midfield player, playing Lewis Cook as that sort of holding midfield player, playing three at the back with the Stacey Smith combination on the wings is just liberating for the team. You know, they all feel comfortable, it seems to me, playing that way in a way that last season we absolutely did not look comfortable at all playing that 4-4-2. So, yeah, it's a really interesting difference. And I think you can see the belief coursing through the players as they see, yeah, you know, we this suits us.
Mm. And on 60 Minutes, Dan Gosling, Jeff, was on a hat-trick. What a great interception by Rico where he just put his body on the line and, you know, Gosling won the ball in the middle of the park. I don't know what, you know, the Coventry midfielder just, you know, ducked out that challenge with Dan Gosling, who managed to easily turn him. And then he had a few steps to hone in on goal. He could have spread it one way or the other, but just thought, why not? And when it hit the back of the net, how did you feel?
I love those shots that seem to accelerate as they still hit the back of the net. I mean, that was just an absolute peach of a strike. And, I mean, another fantastic, fantastic goal. I can't remember Dan Gosling scoring a 25-yarder like that for us in all the time he's been with us.
Yeah, I don't think he scored outside the box, has he?
I don't think so. I mean, the first goal he scored is typical Gosling. You know, that kind of arriving late in the box, just getting a toe on it or hitting it, but from within the 18-yard box where he arrives late and might strike it. But I've never seen him do that. Simon Francis saying, oh, he does that in training. What?
We haven't seen it.
I've never. And but what a strike. And if he can do that, I mean, with Lerma and Gosling being able to hit the ball like that, we've got some threat from midfield, haven't we?
Now, you mentioned Simon Francis saying that he does that in training. Do you think playing behind closed doors almost liberates some players like perhaps it wouldn't do in front of however many thousand fans that would be watching in the stadium? Because we've all seen this renaissance of Dom Solanke. We're seeing Dan Gosling. I mean, to be fair, he wasn't ever a player that was struggling on confidence, but you see him trying things like shooting for 25 yards. Do you think for some players, it's actually a benefit to be playing in front of no one?
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe he thought it was a training session. That's why he did it.
Yeah.
But, you know, what works? And it was absolutely belting to see that go in. Just phenomenal strike. And I so wish that he'd got his hat trick. You know, I mean, he talked after the game about missing the one previously with his right foot over the bar and that goalman scramble. I mean, he was in there for that. So he couldn't, Gosling could have had a hat trick. It was, yeah. I mean, we should have won that game 4-5 even more, shouldn't we? Don't you think?
I did. And Coventry, you know, they'll be all right this season, but how much do we even read into this? Is it a good gauge to, you know, because there's people saying HMS pissed the league, we're going to dominate the championship. But Coventry, I don't think, are the best gauge to read that off, because I didn't think that they were that good. They had moments, but in general, I thought they were quite poor.
Yeah, they their first game, they beat QPR, didn't they? 3-2. And, or actually, that was the second. The first one, they lost narrowly to Bristol City. So, yeah, having seen some of the sides playing in the Championship, not all of them, but some of them, I mean, there doesn't seem to be... don't want this to sound disrespectful, but there's not a great amount of quality in the division so far. And Blackburn have had a couple of good results after we beat them 3-2. And if you watch that game that we beat them 3-2, arguably we gave them a soft goal, the first one, and we should have scored more than three. So you sort of feel, well, if they're one of the better sides and Norwich and not getting results and they're supposed to be one of the better sides, you know, where are the real sort of big challenges for us going to come? Probably we need to play Bristol City or Reading. I think Cardiff away will probably be a test for us to see where we're at, which we've got coming up quite soon. Swansea, maybe, because they were in the playoffs. Brentford, who got hammered by Preston. I mean, it's early days, but we are showing really good quality, and that's very encouraging. We are beating teams that have since done quite well, which again is really encouraging. So yeah, let's just keep it going and see how far we can go.
Now, I spoke of these crunching challenges that were coming in, and Bournemouth weren't afraid to apply a number of them. I think Lewis Cook put in a few crunches in the first half, and then, you know, in the second half, on 65 minutes, there was a moment where Coventry looked like they were breaking and everyone tried to put in a challenge. I think Lerma had a go and Adam Smith did. And in the end, it was a Coventry player that was sent off by the way of Hamer. But what one thing I didn't realise afterwards is that it looked like, I don't know if you saw this, that it looked like he spat at Steve Cook. Did you see any of that?
I saw him mouth something at Steve Cook. I didn't see any spit going in Steve Cook's direction, in which case, you know, Cookie was right to push him. But, you know, like soft sending off. If that had happened to one of our players, he'd be like really sent off for that. And in fact, Martial got sent off for an even weaker sort of tap on someone's face in the United Tottenham game. Yeah. Okay, you know, it's the law. I would say that Smith and the Coventry wing-back had a bit of a physical contest going on all the time. There was no doubt that Adam Smith was going to take him out when he was running back. And actually, he got more of the ball than I thought he'd get. It wasn't that bad a foul. So why they got all upset about it is overreacting in the first place. But Steve Cook, what professional to get the player sent off.
Yeah, but I mean, he could have gone down when that face, that slap was on his face, but he decided not to. He just looked at him with almost disgust, and a lot of Premier League players would be very quick to hit the deck. I mean, you know, we saw that in Sunday's games. So he didn't go all Premier League about it, and he didn't go down holding his noggin. He you know, but at that point, 65 minutes, 11 versus 10, we were basically going through the motions then, weren't we? And, you know, we had chances where we could have made it even more comfortable. Sam Surridge had a chance and, you know, there were others I could think of. But at that point, I just wasn't worried at all, were you?
No, we just sort of played out the game. And in fact, it sort of that sending off made it less of a contest, easier for us to keep the ball. And we just sort of settled for the 3-1, I think, rather than really went for it. Which is fine, you know, we were never in any danger, and 3-1 away is, you know, a great win, very encouraging, not the perfect performance, but really, really positive, good signs.
So a few things I want to broach with you. Well, you know, Lewis Cook, I thought he had a very good game, but I felt at half time, looking on Twitter, there were a number of people that were quick to praise Lewis and quick to diss players like Dom Solanke. Now, in my mind, I think Lewis had a pretty good first half. He had a good second half as well. But there were a number of times I saw that Lewis gave it away in situations where we were in easy possession at that time. And he just tries to play these balls that are overly clever and they get cut out. And it could have resulted in something bad. It didn't. I find that sometimes some players tend to get away with mistakes more than others. Dom Solanke, he seemed to get a lot of stick on Twitter for the mistakes that he made in terms of holding up, and yeah, maybe his last touch wasn't that great. What was your analysis on those two players' performances? Because I've got to say that there are some people that say that Lewis had a brilliant game, and other people say that, you know, Solanke was one of our poorest.
I think just as a team, we're not the finished article by a long way. And I mentioned earlier about we need the strikers to score goals. And I do think that whoever plays up front with Danjuma or Surridge, it's going to be Solanke's first choice, depending on what happens to Josh King. But he's been given the chance to lead the line. I actually think he's doing a pretty decent job in connecting the play. I mean, that layoff for Lerma was very good. Maybe he should have scored before Gosling did, but you know, he's getting in those areas. He's making some good runs. He's doing okay. And I would say on Friday night it was a decent 7 out of 10 performance. I think Lewis Cook, again, he's playing a new role, and I remember games from last season. You know, do you remember that Liverpool game where he gave the ball away trying to be too clever in midfield and they scored? And you just think, you know, he does have that mistake in him. We're likely to get away with it more just because of the lower quality in the Championship. And we did a little bit on Friday night. But again, it was a decent 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 performance. I actually thought he got better as the game went on. Yeah. And in fact, the team got better as we went on. And I do think that we sort of have an expectation as fans that we're going to be brilliant and we're going to, everything is going to be perfect. Well, that ain't football. You know, no. It's very rare that you get that sort of Germany-Brazil semi-final in the World Cup sort of performance, isn't it? You know, hey, last time we went to St. Andrews and we win 8-0, you know, that happens once in maybe 5 or 6 years. I think we've got it in us to do that sort of performance. And maybe we should have won 5 or 6-1 on Friday night. We didn't. You know, there's still work to go. But I think, you know, we just got to be a little bit patient as well. It's a new system. They're getting better at it. We will continue to get better at it.
And also, Jeff, no Danjuma, no King, no Stanislas, no Riquelme. I mean, that's not a bad result, is it? 3-1, where we could have won 6-1, maybe 7-1, yet we've got some of our star performers that are just left either injured or sat on the bench. No Brooks, he wasn't even used. You know, come on. It's a, you know, it's a positive victory, isn't it?
I cannot wait for the next game. I cannot flipping wait for QPR to see how we take that on and play against them, because you know what I'm really looking forward to is more goals, because it was entertaining, and as Bournemouth fans, you know, we've missed that for about the last season and a half. We've had sort of odd games that have stood out, but that was a performance that really felt like the whole team were playing with great positivity, great enjoyment, great intensity, all those things that we got to know and love as we rose up the divisions. That felt like our old Bournemouth a bit. And I want to see more of that. I think we all want more of that. And can't wait for the next game. Because I feel at the moment, you know, we could be the Invincibles this season. With the golfing class is that flipping big. I mean, sorry to go over the top, but, you know, come on. Where is anything to scare us in this division?
Wow. You could be right. One of the things you didn't hear, Jeff, was that when you were, you know, going on your monologue there, I rubbed my hands together, but I muted my mic. And when I rub my hands together, that means I'm really excited. And when you talk about Queen's Park Rangers, it's a rare thing that that I can be excited about a Bournemouth game. Well, especially during the last stage of the Premier League. But now I'm really excited by it. And you know what? When was the last time, Jeff, as a Bournemouth fan, that we had high expectations from a season? Because I'm not too sure. But, genuinely, I'm not sure when I can look back and think, you know what, we should be smashing this league this season. This is the only time I can think of in my supporting history where we think we need to be finishing at a particular level.
Yeah, I think there were times in the Championship season after the first few games where we realised actually we're really good this season, and you know that was a really tough battle to win the title off against Watford and Norwich, but we did it and that was great. Now, I think, I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot better than thinking, you know what, we could get 45 points this season. You know, I'm doing the maths thinking, well, if we got 10 points off our first four games, what's that? You know, we should be, where are we going to be? You know, we're going to be, we could get the century of points, couldn't we, this season? That feels like a target, you know. It's much nicer than thinking we're going to win 10 games in a season as well.
It is. And, you know, there's a lot of things to be excited about. But also, in the same breath, that wasn't the perfect performance. And there's still, the, you know, a lot that we can give. But there were different elements of the performance that are worthy of discussion. One of the things we haven't discussed yet is the, you know, the overlapping fullbacks with Chris Meppham ending up in the right-hand flank during a number of occasions during that game. What was that all about?
And Jack Simpson put in a cracking cross towards the end, didn't he? You know, it's like, wow.
Yeah, he did.
You know, we're like Sheffield United on speed. That was great. It was great. And that lovely sort of drag back that Adam Smith did in the sort of 90-odd minute or wherever it was. You know, they're doing that because they're full of confidence and enjoying it. And I think the confidence, when you realise that the opposition haven't got anything, you know, that Meppham and Simpson could do that and do those overlaps was just great. I mean, Chris Meppham probably needs to work on it a bit because he gave the ball away a few times when he tried to nutmeg the right back. And yeah, you're not quite there, Chris, but it's really encouraging. And it goes to show that this is our version of total football. And I think a certain Keith Thomas pointed out the other day the similarities that we've got with the, I mean, it sounds terribly pompous, right? But the Dutch team from the 70s, the Johan Cruyff and Johan Neeskens and all those guys. I mean, the similarity is that every one of our players is comfortable on the ball.
Yeah.
And there's one thing to be like that in training, another to play like that on the pitch and not get caught out. And I think we're getting to that point where everybody feels they can do it. They can play with utter confidence and belief and just be encouraged to go out and play. And it's joyful. It's refreshing. Love it. More.
More. And I, you know what? I posted a message on the AFC Bournemouth Facebook account after they put a status update celebrating our 3-1 win. And I'll read you the exact words that I said. I said, aside from the result, which is obviously great, tonight was a great chance to enjoy football. No VAR. The ref let the game flow and tried to play the advantage. There were some old-fashioned crunching challenges without officials blowing every 2 minutes. There were goals with no nervous celebrations. It was bliss. I went on to say, it's ironic that the division we're striving to get back into is the polar opposite of what we've experienced tonight. And I said, as ever, the journey is better than the destination. And nights like Friday night, they need to be savoured, don't they, Jeff?
Totally right. Totally right. And I think we can look forward to many more nights that we can savour this season, because this is a team that I think all Bournemouth fans can get behind and be enthusiastic about. And I think, yeah, we're doing it, watching it on TV or laptops or whatever, but we can get behind the side. And when we do get back into stadiums, hopefully there'll still be some games left that we can really enjoy and get a promotion season that we can all feel part of. And I think that'll be great.
just before we close off, Jeff, I've had this discussion with a few friends over WhatsApp. If we get promoted, how will this make you feel about Eddie? Because for me, I'll almost feel a bit, I feel slightly weird about it. Like the success that we've experienced under Eddie is maybe not just down to him. maybe JT had more of an influence than we ever thought. We don't quite know, but you just think with the players that we've got in the situation that we're in, I mean, this is early days. We're four games in, we're third in the league. There's a long way to go. There's, you know, 10 times the amount of games that we've played already to actually, you know, settle this thing. But if we do finish up in the promotion spots, it would be testament to JT for overcoming what is a very difficult situation, not with coronavirus, with, you know, the players that we've lost and playing a new system. And we got promoted under that. And you're kind of thinking, well, is JT better? Early days.
It is early days. I think the reappraisal, we all know what Eddie achieved, and it is a miracle what he did. It's a different chapter of our history. What I'm really impressed by is the reappraisal that I think we owe Jason Tindall already by thinking, I mean, we talked about this, didn't we? The different direction. I think we can see the different direction that he's taken the team. It is a different setup. We are playing differently and it seems to be working. And I think we had a lot of us were kind of like, yeah, well, it'll just copy what Eddie did and it'll be the same old, won't be any change. And actually, it does feel different. I think every manager has a shelf life with a club. You know, you can. There are very few, Alex Ferguson being one of them, who can, you know, outlive a generation and still be winning things. Eddie, I think, just got to the end of his time span with us. You know, he wasn't enjoying it. He wasn't as. He just seemed to have lost his specialness in that final season a bit. Whereas I think JT has looked at it and thought, you know what, we are going to be more flexible and fluid, and I am going to reorganise things for the players. And maybe doing it in the Championship helps because the quality isn't that great, so you can try things out and not get punished as much as you would do in the Premier League. And maybe it has helped us to go down the division. Mm. To get things sorted out and going in the right direction. Because, I mean, imagine if we play that setup for the first four games in the Premier League and we were playing Manchester City, Liverpool, Tottenham or Arsenal, we lose all four and get hammered, you know, you'd be under immediate pressure to get points and shut up shop or try to. So there are lots of things that are different. And I actually feel that it's working in our favour to play this Championship season, to get things back on track. And when we do go back up, not if, when, I think it'll be really interesting to see how this group of players and this way of playing actually translates back into the Premier League and whether it will work or not. I mean, let's just enjoy it for what it is, eh?
He knows he's got a point to prove, and he knows that there are some Bournemouth fans that maybe, you know, were nonplussed about his appointment. So he's got his own personal battles in trying to win over the supporters. But we, you know, we're not in the stadium to give him grief or to, you know, to praise him. And he hasn't got really much to, you know, suggest what Bournemouth fans feel about him. But he'll know that three wins out of four is a very solid start. And in terms of fans not being in the stadium, you know, we've mentioned this before, that could be a good thing for Bournemouth's, you know, potential promotion, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be. I think the real test will come when we go a goal down, because we've led every single game so far.
I agree.
So if we go a goal down and then a team puts 10 players behind the ball, then let's see whether we can get back on terms. And I think that'll be the real test, whether that comes against a Bristol City, or maybe it'll come against, you know, sides like lots of good mid-table sides, competitive mid-table sides. You know, we may find out sooner rather than later how good we really are when we're challenged. And it's all gone in JT's favour at the moment. So jury's still out. Doing well so far, but we still got a long way to go.
A few points to wrap up on then. Did you see the video on AFCB TV where they were training? It was Raquel May's first session. And I said on a forum post on Vitals Forum, I've never seen so much cohesiveness and happiness within the AFC Bournemouth training environment. Everyone seemed so chirpy. There just seemed to be a good vibe that emanated from those players. I don't know if you saw that, and I don't know whether I'm reading into it too much. I know they're trying to capture the good moments on AFCB TV, but for me, it seemed like there's been one of the best environments that we've seen in a long time at the club.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It looks enjoyable, looks like everyone's having fun. Fingers crossed the players want to be there, are enjoying it as well. And it was nice to see Raquelmi sort of welcomed into that environment and kick off straight away. You know, he looks good. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. It'll be really interesting. I mean, some of the clips of him he's got a great pass. He looks really incisive as an attacking midfield player. And, you know, we've sort of struggled without Stanislas or Brooks on the pitch. I'm not convinced that we've got anyone who can take free kicks that will score goals for us at the moment. So maybe he's one of those too.
So the league table then, Bournemouth are third at the moment. How much are you worrying or reading into the very good form of Bristol City and Reading at the moment, who've got 4 out of 4? Are those two teams that worry you?
Well, yesterday Reading had a tough test against Watford. And from what I read, saw about the game, they were fortunate to come away with the win. Watford were kind of undone by not having anyone who could finish. So, not sure about Reading. How good they? I mean, that's a great result to beat Watford because they're a quality side. We know what they're all about. But, yeah, I think with better finishing, Watford could have got a point or maybe won that. You know, it was against the run of play, Reading's goal, from what I could see. Bristol City went 2-0 up and that was no surprise. But then Forest came back at them and actually Forest should have got a draw in that game. So up until that point, Forest had been kind of like one of the whipping boys in the division. So not quite sure. The interesting thing about Bristol City is their manager seems to enjoy a pint with the fans, from what I can see.
Yeah.
You know, good community spirit. And we play them in 3 weeks' time at home, I believe. So, again, that's a fixture I am very much looking forward to as a sort of sense of where we are.
And finally, we mentioned Watford briefly whilst talking about Reading. Norwich, they're the team that I was most worried about, but they don't seem to be taking to Championship life that well by the looks of it.
No, they seem to lack a little bit of creativity in midfield. I mean, they lacked it against us. They never really looked like they were going to score against us. The brightest player, it seems, is Hernandez, who can't do it all on his own from where he plays. So I think they're going to struggle. I mean, Derby, again, we're playing them on the back of 3 defeats. They had some old geezer who scored a free kick for them to win that match, didn't they?
Yeah.
Who obviously can still do that kind of thing because he's a class player. But and then they've got another classy winger waiting in the wings, haven't they? So that'll be interesting to see how he gets on as well.
But the main thing is we're third and it's a position that I think many of us would have taken. I still feel a bit hard done by after that Borough result. I think, you know, we should have been more clinical, and we probably should have got a result. But look, there's a long way to go. New manager, learning a new system. Not everyone's fit. There are a lot of positives to come. And Queen's Park Rangers next, and who knows how that's going to go. But all things look positive. Jeff, thank you very much for your input today.
Thank you. It's nice to talk with a smile, isn't it?
So brilliant to have Jeff on. And here's one that I've not mentioned before, actually. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, do it. It's @JeffWildwood, all one word, Jeff Wildwood. and I'm sure that you can keep up to date with his AFC Bournemouth related content. You might need to on Twitter and keep up with us with YouTube, because we're having a bit of a chillax 2 weeks break now for AFC Bournemouth. I think we deserve one, but it's a chance to recuperate, reflect, and hopefully return all guns blazing against the Rangers in 14 days. So in terms of a QPR preview, of course, it's a little bit too early. The international break hasn't yet happened and, well, anything can happen. We don't know who's going to be at the club. We don't know who's going to get injured on international duty. Hopefully that won't happen. Josh King, will he be in action or will he still have a migraine? Nobody knows. David Brooks, Chris Meppham, will they be involved? All will be revealed. But either way, we're going to be doing our YouTube preview a couple of days before the game on our YouTube channel. Now, in terms of do you remember, it was a tough one. Name our last signing that we made that had an alliterative name. Okay, we think it's Mark Moseley. Is that correct? Let us know. There are some people who've been saying Benji Bouchel, but he didn't play for the first team, so we're not really going to accept him. Sam Surridge not included, but after the signing of Rodrigo Riquelme, it kind of got our brain whirring a little bit as to the last player who we signed that had an alliterative surname, and we think it's Mark Moseley. If you know any different, let us know. Anyway, we cannot wait for football to be back, but we're looking forward to the break as well. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast.
As Gosling wins it back in the Cherries midfield, and now opportunities again for Bournemouth. Gosling goes himself. Oh, it's another cracker! Dan Gosling again, second of the game and the best of the lot so far. A 25-yard strike on the hour puts the Cherries into clear water here against the Sky Blues. 3-1 up.